The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
Happy Halloween to you and good Monday morning. It's time to let you know what's going on this week in our agenda. We're joined this morning by Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for WNYC and The Takeaway, and also with us, Marcus Mabry, editor-at-large of the International Herald Tribune, which is the international edition of our partner, The New York Times. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, since you're there in Europe, Marcus, we might as well talk about maybe the small debt crisis that seems to be capturing a lot of attention. I mean, we did get this big deal last week. People were very bullish on the idea that it might help avert a debt crisis, although markets seem to be down this morning. What do we expect to be happening in response to this deal?
Well, we expect to see as markets really kind of suss out what it really meant. What does the deal really say? This 1 trillion euros, this $1.4 trillion that the European Union has now put behind strengthening any government that needs it in the Union to keep the euro together strong and stable. What does that really mean? That's a lot of money. Everyone's very ecstatic. Markets were ecstatic last week. We'll see as they really suss it out this week, though. Do they retain that kind of joy over the deal, or do they realize that, in fact, this deal is just another Band-Aid, just another stopgap measure? The real problem in Europe is debt, and the fact that these governments, and Greece leads the way, but Italy is not far behind, potentially, and the euro probably couldn't survive if there was to be a run on, say, Italian bonds. The real question here that we face, I think, is long-term. How do you grow your way to prosperity? It's going to be hard for Europe to do that as austerity takes hold in every single economy on the continent. Austerity does not lead to growth. And so that's going to be a long-term problem for Europe. And eventually, I'd say it's going to be a problem for the United States as well.
Well, I'm sure it's also going to be a big topic of conversation at the G20 this week. It begins in France. Charlie, I mean, is there going to be a second deal coming out of the G20?
They've met so many times to sort of the leaders of the European nations to try and figure out a way to solve this problem that, as Marcus is saying, we have the outline, but we still need to get a lot of the details. So I wouldn't put it past the European leaders that they'll have to meet again to discuss even further details about what needs to be done. So, yes, they're meeting. They're going to discuss debt issues. They're going to talk about how they can grow the world economy. But, I'm sitting here in New York and Marcus is overseas there. And the focus really is overseas. I mean, they need to solve what's happening there for fear that it'll have some sort of problem here in the U.S.
Marcus, you need to get to work getting people.
Yeah, Marcus, get that fixed.
Yeah.
Well, the real problem is, Daiichi had a conference on energy a few weeks ago, and I was talking to the chairman of Petrobras, which is the Brazilian quasi-state-owned oil company. And he was talking about how in Brazil, in China, in India, in these growing economies, there's a feeling of euphoria. People are confident that their children will have a better lives than they have today. And here in the West, in Europe and in U.S., where we're sitting right now, we are kind of the anchor, along with Japan, our traditional kind of economic ally, of a real kind of depressive feeling about the fact that economically, we're seeing the decline relatively of the West and Japan and the rise of China, Brazil, and India.
Well, I think that worry is demonstrated in what you see in Occupy Wall Street or even some of the fear amongst the Tea Party. I mean, what you're really sort of seeing here is this worry about where does the economy go from here and how do we make things better for ourselves and for our children.
At the same time, we have had some encouraging numbers. And as we look ahead to the job numbers that will come out for October, I mean, we've had 5 weeks in a row of positive of the markets closing up. We've had a large number of drops in unemployment. The unemployment rate hasn't shifted, but we have seen a drop in unemployment claims.
Yeah, and this may be a little bit of that disconnect between, how the fundamentals of the economy is doing and how people feel about the economy. I mean, there were recent figures last week about consumer confidence, which were at recessionary levels, and yet at the same time, spending was at levels that would not necessarily reflect that. So sometimes people may say one thing and do another thing in terms of how they feel about their own status versus how they think about the overall economy. So, I mean, clearly there is a lot of worry and a lot of fear, and the jobs number isn't getting any better anytime soon. It's just very lackluster, and that's sort of what we expect this week on Friday when we get numbers.
So the Fed Reserve is holding their policy meeting this week. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke seems like he's speaking a lot, but he'll give his quarterly news conference. And since you mentioned Occupy Wall Street, the Fed is the focus of a lot of the protest signs at many of these Occupy Wall Street camps all across the country. I mean, they're demanding that the Fed open up its books and be a little more transparent.
They've become much more transparent over the past couple of years. And, you know, in some aspects, when you look at the various different ways that you can get the economy going, the Fed has been perhaps the most active in the past couple of months, years. I mean, if you look at sort of what is getting done in Congress and what the president is trying to perhaps get done, many disagree with what he's trying to do. But in terms of the two houses, monetary policy, which the Fed controls, and fiscal policy, taxing and spending, which the Congress and the White House control, I mean, the Fed has been the most active trying to do something for the economy. What everyone says consistently,
they have resisted an audit, we should be correct about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do have some oversight. I mean, what specifically do you mean by an audit in the sense of?
Well, Ron Paul says, "Open your books. We want to audit everything."
Well, you know, they are also part of. They're an independent agency that has oversight by Congress, but they are, you know, they've been pretty transparent. They could be more open about other things that they're doing, but at the same time, they are trying to be very active about trying to keep the economy going in a way that perhaps Ron Paul and Congress should be a little bit more active in trying to help the economy.
It's going to be interesting to see, I think, because I think those job numbers are really key. And I think that's the key to all this. If our job numbers start to improve, then I think all the kind of anger and the angst that is both, as Charlie said, runs through the Tea Party and runs through Occupy Wall Street, those things dissipate when you see job growth. And I think that's the key to this. So if we see job numbers that are surprisingly to the upside, as we did GDP numbers for the third quarter last week, that would be a real shot in the arm, at least to the markets. And the markets, I think, will react more quickly than the people in Occupy Wall Street, because the markets are where people have money right now, and people in Occupy Wall Street want jobs.
Exactly. Some people have money in the markets. But, you know, into all this discussion about low employment, high unemployment, we get this other news that we got our seven billionth person. Charlie, did you take anything away from that?
A lot more people
and clearly, more austerity measures.
Well, clearly it's just a shift too in time where those people are and growing economies. And sort of the role of what Marcus was talking about, Brazil, China, India, they call them the BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China. And those are places where we're seeing growth not only in terms of their economies, but the number of people there as well.
Sure.
And the amount of energy that all those 7 billion people are going to use and the effect on the planet, I think that's going to be a huge issue we're going to face, and so will our children and our grandchildren.
I think you're right. Marcus Mabry, editor-at-large of the International Herald Tribune. That's the international edition of the New York Times. Joined us from London, England, and Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for WNYC and The Takeaway, joining us here in studio in New York. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.